Did you know that stress can cause autoimmune diseases or even multiple sclerosis in some cases? But today I have Kathy Eads with me, who is a stress management professional, and she'll be sharing us tips about how to manage stress better and how to live a healthier, more fulfilling life. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks for joining us. Kathy, before we dive in, can you tell us a little bit about what is stress?
Stress can be measured by a lot of different ways, and sometimes people will start ticking off the things in their life that cause them stress. But mostly, what stress is our response to outer or inner stimuli. So it's our feelings about something that happens to us or something that is said to us, then our thoughts about those feelings and what does that mean and our judgment about it. And then also, how do we react? So our reaction or our response can then cause the stress to grow even more, depending upon how we choose to handle it.
So you have worked with hundreds of people, helping them to relieve stress. In your experience, what are the most common causes in a modern day environment for
If
stress?
I'm just having a conversation with someone, they'll talk about work, family, and potentially health issues or just their anxiety over the state of the world. So they'll list off things outside themselves. And so when I start talking to people, we dig down from there and talk about how they are perceiving things that are happening outside of them. For instance, if they have a conversation with a coworker and the coworker says something that they feel is rude or disrespectful or they're being talked down to, it could be any number of things. The stress response comes in their perception of that comment and their attachment to their feelings about it. I think that person was being rude to me. And so then that can ramp things up. And then, if you respond in a way that you might, if you feel like you've been disrespected, that can then cause more friction, which then adds to that stress.
Thank you. So, what are the results of having stress in our lives?
The results can range from just having more fear, anxiety, and worry, all the way to starting to have, as you mentioned, disease within the body. Because every feeling, every emotion that we have, everything that we're perceiving through our five senses has to be processed, experienced fully, and then released from the body. And a lot of times we have this situation where we think we need to stuff those feelings away. We can't deal with them right now. And then we never get back around to them. So they just end up piling up. And at some point, as with anything where you're stuffing, they will overflow. And it causes all kinds of disruption within the bodily systems to keep stuffing these emotions down rather than allowing yourself to feel them and then fully releasing them from the body. So I work with my clients to help fully experience things and then let them go. Because then once you've let that go, then you can start processing other things. It's like gunking up the system too. If you get so used to stuffing things down, your ability to let things go becomes even more difficult because you've clogged up the system.
So, what are the symptoms of anxiety?
It can range from being visibly anxious, where someone could even be visibly shaky or very irritable and edgy. But some people experience anxiety in a really different way. And you, to look at them from the outside, they look perfectly calm. But inside, they are in an extreme panic and very scared and worried. So they're not thinking very clearly. They're just quiet. So people that have panic attacks and that kind of thing will tell you that it can be experienced in some really different ways.
So panic attacks are also related to anxiety.
They are. Anxiety is a feeling that we all have sometimes. So saying that people can never be anxious isn't realistic. It's a human emotion. However, severe anxiety, where you're worried about just going about things, day-to-day tasks, leaving the house, that kind of thing. That's a higher level of anxiety. And then a panic attack is actually the body's like this physiological response where people often will almost feel as if they're going to die. They're not, but the response of the body is like, you're in so much danger. I can't handle this right now. So that's the level of stress and anxiety with a panic attack.
Wow, that sounds really scary. So tell us the secret, how not to stress.
First of all, I want to help people understand that to say you're never going to experience stress would mean that you are not alive anymore, because stress is a part of being a human being. And a certain amount of stress makes us develop resilience and the ability to cope. It's when stress is at a really a high level, high enough to say you don't feel very safe, whether that's emotionally, physically, professionally, like you don't feel like you're in a safe environment at work or in your home. That type of stress over a long period of time can really wreak havoc on the physical well-being, as well as your emotional and mental health. So what the key is that we need to take the attitude of, I don't want to completely get stress out of my life. That's not realistic. But I want to be able to manage it when I experience it so that it doesn't damage my health, damage my emotional well-being. I want to have a sense of control over how I deal with stress in order to preserve my health and also just be happier. When we're able to process the stress, have a way of coping with it and reducing it overall, we just are generally happier and more at ease.
So how do you manage stress?
There are several different ways to manage it. And I think when I'm working with an individual, we talk about, what are you already doing? Because I like to start with people where they are. What are you already doing to manage stress? And some people might say, I'm exercising, or I'm trying to get extra sleep. I go to bed at a certain time, wake at a certain time. So there are so many different approaches, but I want to start with people where you are. Like, what is working for you? Don't stop doing that. If you're still feeling like that's not enough, then let's take a look at some other things. I highly recommend, even if people aren't familiar with meditation and breath work, when they start with me, that's part of what we do, is I coach them through how to incorporate that. And when people hear meditation, they may have all kinds of different ideas. There are many different types of meditation. The goal of pretty much every meditation is to calm the mind, calm the nervous system, and allow your body and your physiology to just take a break. Allow the mind to just go offline a little bit so that everything comes down. So that is a big part of what I train people to do and guide them through. Some folks like silent meditation, some like guided, some like a walking meditation in nature, so many different types. And then breath work, it depends on the person's situation as to what type of breath work, whether they want something a little more or need something a little more energizing or a little more calming and balancing. So again, I talk with each individual about where they are and what they're needing most, and then we go from there. But I also recommend I call it like the precious pause. We live in a culture that really is a go, produce, like, how productive are you? And sometimes what we need to be more productive is we need a pause. We need to take a daily break for 20 minutes and go for a walk or do a yoga nidra, which is not a actual physical yoga practice. You're actually lying down and someone is usually on an audio guiding you through this total body relaxation. And there are studies that show 20 minutes of yoga nidra is 2 hours of sleep for your body. It's that refreshing, but it also really calms the system. So I like to work with what people are already doing. What can we add that's going to just increase the benefits? The meditation, the breath work, the pause, and then the level of self-care that people practice. And this is not like going to the nail salon or going and getting a professional shave at the barber. It's more, what are your routines every day? What are you doing to take care of your physical and mental well-being each day? And one of the things I often tell people, one of the best self-care things you can do is a daily yoga nidra, a daily walk outdoors in fresh air with the sunshine. And if you're close to a green area, healing of nature is huge. They're not really what I might call the sexy tools that some people might talk about or find online. They're really simple. It's just a matter of incorporating them into your day. And so a lot of what I do with folks is I provide the container and I take the guesswork out of things so that they're not online searching, what can I do for stress relief? I provide a plan and then I guide you through it. And we meet periodically and go over that together so that these practices can become a habit, because eventually you want to be able to do this on your own and just not have to think about it.
Sounds very calming and soothing just as you talk about these things. But I would like to play a little bit of a devil's advocate here.
Sure.
I have a lot of high performers in my network, and in my experience, they tend to seek even higher levels of stimulation than they experience in the daily lives just to switch off, because that's where they find if they increase the stimulation levels even further, then the daily life doesn't seem as bad.
Totally can agree with that. I understand that work hard, play hard, balancing out the two. And I wouldn't tell someone, oh no, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. If that is exciting for you, you're getting fulfillment from it, go for it. But also realize that you are leaving something on the table if you are not also honoring that you are a human being who needs, even if you don't realize it, we do all need that calm, being able to bring things in. Really, stress management, it's inner work. It's not about the stress outside of you. It's about bringing the attention inward and saying, how am I dealing with this? What can I do differently? How am I reacting? Are my emotions driving what I'm doing? Or am I able to take a pause, consider what's happened, not be attached to the outcome, and then move forward and respond in a skillful way with grace? And the only folks that I know who are like really highly skilled at that are people who practice it throughout their lives and then are able to just draw on that without having to give it a lot of thought. And I will say, this is something that most people who feel skilled at, they know it's a practice. Even the people who write books about this will tell you, like, oh, this is what happened last week when someone pulled in front of me in traffic. We're human beings. We have reactions. We are emotional beings. So Sharon Salzberg, for instance, is a meditation teacher who's been teaching meditation for, gosh, 20 or 30 years. But in her book, she talks about these things, these interactions she has and how her ego comes up and her emotions come up. And then she's, oh, but it's the awareness that allows you to then reflect on it and go back and be like, oh, I could have handled that differently, and make a decision about how you'll handle it moving forward. But I'm not sure that goes back to what you're saying with that high level of need for stimulation, both like professionally and in your off time. But what I would say is that if you're a very high performer and you have very high stress, and you also are over here doing the really stimulating, high energy adventure activity, just know that here in the middle, like, your true nature is a calm being. So if you're doing things to respect that and honor that, you're going to have a higher level of performance in the workplace. And you might also, if you're like competitive sports or you're doing, I don't know, skiing, you might end up performing there also, because that inner calm that you're cultivating is on board in all these instances. Your thinking is clearer, you're able to make decisions more quickly and with a better awareness of the impact and consequences of them. I do challenge someone who says, I just don't need this stuff, to give it a try for 60 to 90 days and see the results.
Thank you for sharing that. I think those are great tips for high performers, and I can totally see how creating this balance and how you need the yin and the yang, as they say in Chinese, right? Like, you need both polarities in life to create the balance, right? Very interesting insight. Talking about stress, what are some of the most severe causes of stress? If you experience stress over an extended period of time, what happens to the body?
So the body eventually is in this heightened state of arousal. So it damages the tissues, essentially. It starts to damage the body at a cellular level. And most often, disease of any kind, whether stress-related or not, you will have some gut symptoms before you have other symptoms, most often. And people might think, oh, I don't have IBS or something like that. It comes down to the very regularity of your elimination. When I am working with doing an initial assessment with a client, we get into talking about your daily bowel movements and what is that whole process, because your digestive system from mouth to the exit, that whole pathway is highly affected by levels of stress. So if you're feeling any kind of even acidity, acid reflux, anything with your elimination, all of those things are indications that something's slightly out of balance and we need to take a look at getting it back in balance. Because you really do want to handle stuff when it's still in the gut before it moves to other tissues of the body. That's, I know it's a...
No, I'm laughing about something different. Actually, I have to share with you that I come from a startup environment. As I may have told you, I had a tech startup at one point, and I was part of this networking group for startup owners. And I've been suffering from reflux, right? So one time I mentioned it, I don't know, casually, it somehow came up in a conversation. And then all the people who were there, you do? I do too. I do too. And then suddenly it was like 6 out of 10 people from the group were like, yeah, I do too. I have that also.
Yeah. Until people start talking to one another, sometimes they don't realize, A, lots of people are having stuff happening in that department. And then also, occasionally somebody will go for a long period of their life with a symptomology around digestion and elimination that they don't even realize is not normal because it's pretty normal for them. Yeah. So I've even talked to people like, you want to be able to produce an A+ poo once a day at minimum. And we talk about what are the habits that you need to have to support your digestion? Because again, we have a lot of these habits around meals and food that are not good. They are not good for digestive health. And if we know that disease often starts there, we need to put a real priority on our food habits and our food choices, because as the saying goes, what you eat is truly, literally what you are. It makes up every cell of your body. So it's super important. But you were asking what other things happen to the body and the mind. So you will, if you're under a lot of stress for over a long period of time, also, you'll find that decision-making becomes hard. You can be easily confused and even start to maybe doubt yourself and second guess yourself because you're unsure. That's that whole idea of that safety. And the body gets into that whole fight, flight, freeze, or fawn response. And we're supposed to be able to use that to our advantage. We're designed as humans to have those responses, because if we're being chased by a bear, we need to be able to do what's necessary. That's like a short-term situation. When you're dealing with that over a long term, that cortisol and adrenaline, all of those chemicals that are supposed to help us run away and get safe, are so heightened that they have a negative effect on the body. They're supposed to come, let us get out the stress or move, get away from the danger, and then we can come back down to that homeostasis. But if we're up here all the time, our bodies and minds never get back down to that homeostasis. So we start to have physical, emotional, mental health problems as a result of that.
Can you give us a few examples of these potential health problems that can happen if you experience stress over an extended period of time?
It's going to vary from individual to individual just because of our genetic predisposition and our primary constitution. I come from an Ayurvedic background of training, so we talk about our primary dosha and people deal with these stresses a little bit differently based on their primary constitution or their primary dosha. But yeah, often people are going to end up with, like I said, they'll have digestive systems. They'll go to the doctor, and very much in the Western approach, it's, you have a symptom, let's just make that symptom go away so you can feel better. But they're not getting down to the root of the problem, which is when you go back home, the family situation is so dire, so stressful that you can't calm down. So that symptom gets under control. Then later, a few months down the road, you're going to get another symptom. And this time it might be outside the digestive tract. It might be you have terrible back pain, or you have a terrible pain in your foot. It starts to move around the body, because it's almost like the idea that you're, again, you're jamming something in, and we're just putting a little Band-Aid over something, but there's still an infection there. The germ, the cause, hasn't been removed. So we look at the causative factor, remove the causative factor, and then go in and support the mind and body to heal. But yeah, oftentimes people will end up with, as you mentioned, an autoimmune condition is a really typical place where people end up with super high stress over long periods of time. I don't know if it's an official diagnosis yet in the DSM, but complex PTSD is not from a single traumatic event, but it is from this heightened level of fear and insecurity over a long period of time. And that's what makes it complex. It's not, oh, there was a robbery and you were held up at gunpoint. That's a very easy thing to define and deal with. I shouldn't say easy, but it is easy to define, and then you work with that. But when it's complex, the body's been under this stress for so long, it's just hit all these different systems. And that heightened hypervigilance not only affects the physical body and your thinking patterns, but your nervous system, which is a big piece with the autoimmune. The nervous system even has to be reprogrammed almost in order to achieve a state of homeostasis. It's so used to trying to defend you that it's just, I don't really think you're safe. We haven't been for so long. I don't really think you're safe. So I'm going to keep being hypervigilant. So I work with people to do some limbic retraining, as well as we can call them acupressure points or marma points, but they're just points on the body where you actually just put a light pressure and it helps to calm the nervous system down. And I know I've mentioned the yoga nidra before. Same thing. It's a multi-purpose tool. So I use it a lot.
Wow. Okay. This is incredible. Like what you're saying about how this heightened awareness or heightened level of stress affects us on the long run, that even after an extended period of time when you experience this and finally when things calm down, your body still doesn't allow you to let your guard down. And I can totally see how that's like a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way as well, that kind of has a snowball effect where you keep putting yourself into situations where you experience heightened stress because it just becomes a pattern.
And you can become that sort of hypervigilant state. You are beginning to perceive things that you experience in a little bit more threatening way, because your body's already, and your mind and your nervous system is already on guard, so that your perceptions are more threatening, because it's just, I don't really think you're safe here. So I'm going to stay in this heightened state of arousal in order to protect you, but it eventually wreaks havoc on your body.
All right. Look, you mentioned autoimmune disease as a potential cause. What is autoimmune disease actually?
Autoimmune disease in the most basic sense, and there are many different types of autoimmune disease, but it is the immune system turning around and attacking parts of the body. For instance, Hashimoto's is a type of thyroid disease where the immune system is actually attacking the thyroid gland and not allowing it to perform what it needs to do and produce the hormones that it needs to produce, which can lead to lots of different symptoms, fatigue, hair loss. There are a handful of other ones as well. The body's systems, organs, the skin, the brain, there's an inflammation component here. most of the time with a heightened stress level, there's inflammation in the body all the time. And as many people know, inflammation within the body also is a huge contributor to disease, chronic disease, because that is, it's almost that same type of thing. Inflammation is our body's way of flaring up when it needs to, and then it needs to come back down to that homeostasis. When we can't get that inflammation down, then it starts to mess with our systems because they're never in that calm and relaxed state.
So what would be an example of autoimmune disease? What is the most common form of autoimmune disease?
I don't know what the most common form of autoimmune disease is. I know that there are Hashimoto's, I mentioned, chronic fatigue has an autoimmune component. There is a condition called mast cell activation syndrome, which is the mast cells are attacking the body. They're one of the most primitive parts of the immune system. Every bit of the body has mast cells. And when they perceive a threat, they immediately release like thousands of chemicals to go after that pathogen or that thing that seems like a threat. But when you have mast cell activation syndrome, they're actually attacking things, or they're flaring up and responding to things like an apple or too much exercise, which isn't necessarily too much exercise, but it is for when the mast cells are already activated and you go on a run, you might end up with a terrible rash. So that is one type as well. And MS is an autoimmune disease. There are a lot of different types of autoimmune. So I couldn't possibly try to go through them all. And I wouldn't want to leave something out, because someone out there who has one would be like, what about us? Because I think with autoimmune, it is often a chronic condition, but can be managed sometimes to a level where you are able to go on and live a pretty healthy, pretty normal life. But you have to be more self-aware, and you have to be a little more in control of diet, self-care, all of those things. You are going to have to pay closer attention to those things than someone who doesn't have an autoimmune condition.
Can you tell us a little bit more about multiple sclerosis and what are the causes?
It's a complex disorder. And I've recently done some reading, and I don't have the study in front of me. It was done within the military service in the United States, because MS is a condition that will prevent someone from joining the military, at least within the United States. And so they took a look at these people who had come in to the service and had MS, and did a screening for them to find out what kind of virus was in their background, because they were trying to bring some sort of causality between Epstein-Barr virus and MS. And they were actually able to determine that is a causative factor. That does not mean that every person who ever contracts Epstein-Barr virus does get MS. And by the way, Epstein-Barr virus is a super common virus. Most of us are exposed to it when we're a child. We get sick, we get better, end of story. But some people are not able to completely clear that virus from their system. And if you have the genetic predisposition, then that virus can lead directly to MS. And that was what the study determined, which was actually a wonderful discovery, because then the next step was the idea that a vaccination for that particular virus could potentially be developed. And then that would prevent anyone who had this genetic predisposition from contracting the virus in the first place, and then prevent them from developing MS. But that's like the next step beyond this initial study. But I found it really fascinating to see that connection between the two.
Thank you. So you mentioned that stress can cause chronic pain.
So chronic stress, or any stress, causes the muscles to tense and tighten. So if we have stress over a long period of time, the muscles tense and tighten because they're ready to take action and protect us. And that in itself will cause muscles to spasm. You can eventually get even nerve pain from all of this pressure and inflammation in the muscles. So it's just, again, one of these layers of stress causing the body to, I like to use the word to flare. It's doing its job. But then when you can't allow that flare to come back down, it just causes the body to be like, okay, what am I going to do now? And pain is a sign to us that there is a problem that needs to be solved. Oftentimes, and I respect Western medicine, I have family members who are alive because of the interventions of Western medicine, but the Western approach to some things is, let's make that symptom go away so you can feel better. Pain is looked at as, we just need to solve the pain, not why are you feeling pain? What's causing the pain? It's almost, if you put your hand on a hot surface, the pain is not the problem. It's that you have your hand on a hot surface. You need to remove the causative factor, which is that your hand touched something hot. When we're feeling pain, we need to find out what's at the root of that and then remove the causative factor. And most of the time, the pain will completely go away by itself because we've taken care of the reason. So our body doesn't need to send us the message like, hey, you need to fix this problem. I need you to pay attention here anymore. So it can stop feeling the pain.
You mentioned Western medicine, and you also told us that you trained in Ayurvedic medicine.
I am an Ayurvedic wellness counselor. I don't have an Ayurvedic medicine degree. There are different levels of Ayurvedic training. An Ayurvedic doctor would be years and years of training. And I bring the Ayurvedic wellness component into what I do with people. So my training is at a lower level.
Well, sorry to interrupt you. So what is Ayurveda?
So Ayurveda is the traditional system of health management that is over 5,000 years old. It was first developed in India and is still practiced and researched in India and in other parts of the world today. And it is all based on prevention and these things that I've talked about with care for yourself so that you don't become sick. Now, obviously, there are ways that we're exposed to germs, but within Ayurveda, our approach is we build up our immunity and are constantly being aware of trying to do the things that keep our immunity high. So when we are exposed to something, the body can then fight it off more effectively. Obviously, there are environmental factors. There is no way to 100% prevent all disease, but if you are taking very good care of yourself, from your sleep, your food, and the management of your energy, those are the three pillars of Ayurveda, then your immunity is going to be higher. Your digestive strength is going to be healthy and strong. Your skin and hair are going to be healthy. Your organs are going to be working optimally. That's the whole idea, is that you are holistically caring for yourself in order to keep yourself healthy and prevent disease.
It sounds wonderful. I really like the idea. All right.
Very holistic approach. I think a lot of times in our culture, the Western approach is, I'm going to go here to get dietary information from this person, and I'm going to go over here to get my medical information from this person, and I'm going to go here to a therapist for these things. And what we're looking at is this holistic approach so that you can manage your mind and emotions, manage your physical well-being, manage your activity and exercise, all within an Ayurvedic lens or from an Ayurvedic lens, so that it's not disjointed like you might get if you're going to lots of different places to get your guidance.
Wow. Sounds like very deep ancient wisdom to me.
It is. It's been a really interesting thing for me to study, and it's taken some mind shift. It definitely is. It's opening you up to approaching your well-being from a little bit different angle than what I have grown up with in the United States.
Thank you for sharing that. Kathy, At what stage should somebody seek help with their stress?
I think if you are feeling stress and feeling like it's unmanageable, or you are feeling that it is affecting you, your relationships, your health, your ability to be productive enough in your work life that you aren't, the mind isn't racing. If you feel any of those things, then I think it's definitely time to reach out to someone and get some assistance. Again, we all are going to experience stress in our lives. And some of us, depending upon the way we are wired when we're born, are able to manage it more easily than others. So there's nothing wrong with being a little bit more sensitive to stressful situations. Often I find that the people who are a little more sensitive also are a little more in tune with what their emotional state is. And they're not the people pushing things away, but the culture is saying, you don't need to deal with that. Like, you need to soldier on and suck it up and push through. That doesn't work for a lot of people. And that's not to say one way is better than the other. We need all types. But people who are highly sensitive are also very creative. They're the people that see things in the world that the rest of us may not even perceive. So I like to encourage people to not think of it as a weakness to feel like you need help managing your stress. It's just you're aware that you need that support, and you're courageous enough to ask for the help.
So what would be your top 3 tips for people who are experiencing stress that they can implement even today to better manage their stress levels?
The thing that I recommend most to people, if they're in a specific situation that is stressful, so they're having a conversation with someone that becomes stressful, they're in a work meeting that's stressful, they have an interaction with their child, whatever, the traffic is crazy, take what I call the 60-second stress slayer breath. It's very short, it's very simple, and you do it maybe just for 60 seconds, you can, or you might take a few more minutes. And it's a breathing pattern. You're just allowing the body to come back down a little bit from that heightened state. And it's very simple. I have that actually is available on my website as an audio. It's breathing into the count of 4 and you're pausing. So even if you're in a meeting, the only thing people are going to notice is that you've taken a pause, which in a way gets people's attention also, especially if you're someone who reacts very quickly with a response. But you inhale to the count of 4 and then you exhale to the count of 6, maybe 8. Oftentimes we're shallow breathing if we're stressed. So the in count of 4, exhale count of 6 is good. That extended exhale is telling the parasympathetic nervous system, I'm okay. I don't need to run. I'm safe. I'm in control here. I can make a decision. It's okay. I know it feels bad or it feels stressful, but I'm okay. And so that's just that inhale to count of 4, exhale to the count of 6. It turns on that parasympathetic response. And I have another, especially if you're in an interaction that's pretty stressful, you can do this even when the other person is speaking. You can be doing your 60-second stress layer breathing while you're listening. It also helps you to be a little bit better listener because you're calming things down. When we are heightened, it's a little bit harder for us to listen clearly and to perceive the full message that's trying to be given. And it allows us to then respond, take that pause so that we have a skillful response rather than a reaction. Because our reaction is the like knee jerk, like, bam, I think a thought, something comes out of my mouth. But if we've got this breathing going, it gives the brain a little moment to consider and then come out with something that might be a little better received, a little more like what we want to send back out into the world as a response. In addition to that 60-second stress layer, there is another breathing technique that is called alternate nostril breathing. It goes by a couple of other names. Nadi Shodhana is another one that's another term for that breathing. But it's a very balancing breath. This is one you would want to do, say, after that interaction is over. If you're in the office, go to the bathroom so you can have some privacy in the bathroom stall or your car, or just go to a space where you can have some quiet to yourself time. Maybe even for 5 minutes, 10 minutes, set a timer if you need to get back for the next call. Or if you're at home, go to a room on your own and just close the door and have some quiet time. This breathing, though, you're actually using your hand on your face and your nose and breathing in and out the different sides of the nostrils. And this is really balancing. So you've had this stressful situation. It allows the body to really come back down and reset everything. In addition to that, I encourage people to do something physical to disengage or discharge that energy that comes from fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. There is this energy from the adrenaline and the cortisol that needs to be then, like, we want to clear that out. So going on a walk, it doesn't have to be anything. I've had somebody say, what if I just get up and wiggle at my desk? And I'm like, totally fine. Like, you are physically moving the body around. Do your favorite dance move. That's the physical release of that energy. And so if you're doing all of these things, you're going to bring the body back down to that homeostasis much more easily than if you're just like, oh, I have a call in 10 minutes. I'm just going to need to review my notes and get ready. Allow yourself that time to reset and you'll be better on that next call. You'll think more clearly. You'll be able to express yourself better. It's well worth taking that pause to give yourself that reset time.
That's great advice. Thank you very much for that, Kathy. Kathy, tell us, who do you typically work with?
I work mostly with people who are either really busy and they're just tired of trying to research and find different resources for their wellness routines. And they want somebody to just take the guesswork out of it for them. So that is one group of folks that I work with. And the other people are people who are managing chronic health conditions. And they, again, are just wanting to find someone who will meet them where they are, take into consideration all of their unique needs, and then build a program and also walk them through it so that they're not given something and then they're not sure how to implement things. I find that people often have really good intentions and they want to improve their well-being. They really want to incorporate these things, but the logistics of how do I fit these things into my life in for both of these groups is difficult. And I provide like this container where we cover it all together once or twice a week. And then you can also bring these elements in each day. And I don't work with a lot of people at one time so that I can provide really individualized attention. And I check in with people a couple times a week. How's it going? What's working well for you right now? Because we can tweak things too. Somebody might say, I just can't possibly fit XYZ in. And I can offer something else that will work within their lifestyle. Because the needs of someone who's a high performer, an executive in a company running a startup or something is a very different life dynamic than someone who's retired and managing their MS condition. They want to be able to travel and enjoy their retirement. Or somebody who's managing a household of three children and is just, I don't have time to shower some days. What do you expect me to do? This and such. But I really do enjoy working with people who they've got a goal and they're like, I just can't seem to like quite get there. I either find something that I like, but I can't stick with it. Or I just haven't found anything that really fits for me. And we build something around their lifestyle, the rhythm of their life, and make sure that it fits in so that they can meet their goals. Because that to me is huge when you've got someone, especially I work with folks who have MS, who are managing Lyme or arthritis, or somebody's going to have a hip replacement. They still want to feel just as good as everybody else, but they have to make some special decisions around their needs. And so those are the folks that I like working with because I can see the goalpost and I can keep reminding them, this is where we're going and this is what I see you doing. Because I think that's another piece when you're trying to work on things on your own. When you're looking at things from the inside, you sometimes don't see your progress like someone who's watching you from the outside. So I can remind them, hey, listen, 6 weeks ago, you weren't able to do a forearm plank. Now look at you. You're able to do a full plank with no forearms. That's a huge increase in your strength. And so I keep them focused on that goalpost that they're headed toward.
Kathy, what's the greatest transformation you have achieved with any of your clients, or the most memorable transformation, should we say?
There have been different ones. I have one client. She is someone who is managing MS, and she also is a cancer survivor. So she's got a really interesting story. She's dealt with a lot of illness over the years. And one of the greatest compliments I got was from her. And she said, working with you, at the end of our session, I feel incredibly calm, but at the same time, really energized. And like, I can take on whatever comes my way. And I was like, that is exactly what I'm going for. I want you to feel so confident and capable and energized to move forward, leaving this time we've had together, and also so just centered and at peace and grounded that when something comes your way that's unexpected, it doesn't set you off. Like, you are really, the word I always use is grounded. You don't just flap in the wind like a flag. Something happens and you're like, huh, that happened. How am I going to deal with that now? You're much less emotionally reactive. So that was a huge compliment that she gave. But then I've also been working with a woman who is 79, I believe. And she was really having a difficult time emerging after COVID. It was a very scary time for her and her husband because they were in the age group that was really at risk. And she's, you know, had some anxiety around just getting back into the world. Plus, she was dealing with some chronic health conditions and felt like she'd lost her balance, not just physically. She was challenged with her balance physically, but also like she could tell, like just emotionally, she was not feeling as well. And so she has gained strength. She's gained a lot of balance, which I continually have to mention to her. Hey, but you're doing this. She talks about, but I want to do the things like X, Y, Z 20 years ago. And I said, but look at the progress you've made in this time we've worked together. And she's traveling with her husband now. They're retired, so they're going all over the place. And when we first started working together, that was out of the question. She was just coming to my studio, and that was an outing for her. So she said, yeah, you're right. I guess I've made some progress. And I said, you've made a lot of progress. So to me, that's incredibly fulfilling to see folks who are, again, they have these goals they want to meet, and then we're meeting them. And then they start thinking, oh, well, that's not a big deal because I met that goal. And I'm like, okay, so what's next? Don't discount what you've already achieved, but there's something you want to go for next. Let's readjust and work toward that next thing.
Wow. Kathy, if somebody wants to work with you, where can they find you?
My website is probably the best place to start. And it is called findblissyoga.com. And they can also find me on YouTube. My YouTube handle is Bliss Yoga with Kathy. And I am on Instagram, just not very frequently. And I think, Mike, you have the link for my Instagram handle as well.
We'll put all the links in the description of this video so you guys can find them.
Okay.
All right. With that, if you enjoyed our conversation, please subscribe to our channel. And follow us for more personal and professional development content and our conversation with professional coaches like Kathy. Thank you for joining us today, Kathy, and thank you for sharing all this valuable knowledge and advice about how to better manage stress and how to avoid chronic diseases by living a more wholesome and fulfilling life through meditation, breathwork, and different stress management exercises, even if we can't avoid stress in our lives.
Thank you, Mike. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate you having me.